Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Smart Marks of Wrestling Podcast presented by TheSportster.com. You'll find us on Anchor.fm on all your favorite platforms for podcasts. Brandon is on the other line. Brandon, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. What's going on?
Well, not much, man. Just kind of keeping up. Friday afternoon, so I'm getting ready for a Friday night SmackDown that will be happening from Manchester tonight. So I'm expecting some big things out of that show. But man, oh man, this week has been crazy, unexpected. Yeah. And full of really good surprises if you're a wrestling fan. I don't even know where we should start. Where do you want to start? What was the takeaway of the week for you so far?
Oh, I don't know. So much has happened. I want to talk. I mean, the takeaway of the week should probably be one of our last discussions, and it's AEW related. We can just start with, I think we were talking before about how we didn't really cover the results of the pay-per-view because, I mean, it happened last week, right? So we haven't really spoken since then.
Crown Jewel, we did our prediction show. Yeah, right before we aired the last one, Crown Jewel was about to go on the air, and we were hoping that the pay-per-view would be good, and it was. I was surprised. Those Crown Jewel Saudi Arabia shows are typically not very good, but this one was, to me anyway, the best one that they have done. Like, bar none, hands down, better than all the other pay-per-views that they've done in Saudi Arabia, which have been total throwaway shows. This one was good. There was lots of results. The attractions worked out okay. Maybe the results of the matches themselves weren't fantastic, but the show was good. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, considering how we described it or like we're talking about it beforehand, a pleasant surprise. I'm not going to say it was a great show, but I think it was much better than expected. And as far as Crown Jewels go, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway for me was the fact that they finally changed the title. They haven't really done that on any of these shows outside of maybe a Cruiserweight Championship they might have changed one time, but nothing ever really happens at these shows.
Yeah, it's just a house show.
That's not what happened on Friday last week or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they sure made a swap here, and they, you know, arguably gave fans what they wanted, which was that Seth Rollins is no longer the champion, and Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, is now the Universal title holder. What did you think of that match? Did you like the match? Did you like the finish? Did you like the fact that they gave him the belt?
Well, I've got a few thoughts on it. First of all, I want to take an over-under bet on how long it takes for fans to hate The Fiend and want the title off of him and onto ex-superstars' hands before they hate him as well. Because that's just the way it goes. Like we said, Seth Rollins was, you know, everyone, he was the hottest superstar in wrestling. And then everyone hated him just because he was the chosen boy. So it's going to be a nice ride to see Bray Wyatt and how long he can keep the admiration of the fans. I don't like the red that happens during the match. I understand why they keep it during the match.
I don't think anybody likes the red. I haven't heard a single positive reaction to that.
But in general, I mean, good match, right? Like, it was what you expected the match to be. And then Bray Wyatt coming out on top was just shocking. One, because it's the Universal Championship and it's red, and it's now on SmackDown. Two, because Brock Lesnar was on SmackDown. Is on SmackDown? I don't know the whole situation there, to be honest. What's actually going to happen with that? Which I do want to talk about, by the way.
Sure.
And, I mean, yeah, it's shocking. Definitely shocking. I don't think either of us expected him to win it. We were both pretty much had said, Rollins is going to win the match, and unfortunately, no one's going to like it regardless of how the match looks. Well, the match was fine, and the outcome was what they wanted. So I can't imagine anybody was really disappointed with that. Well, anyone.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I like the outcome of the fact that Bray Wyatt the Fiend is now the Universal Champion because, one, that's how it should be. That's how it should have been after Hell in the Cell.
Sure.
They did it on a Saudi Arabia show, which they never do, which was a nice surprise. But there is still, I'm firmly in the camp, and if you mentioned it earlier, when will people turn on Bray Wyatt? The problem with Bray Wyatt is that WWE, from the moment that he was created, have painted themselves into a corner somewhat. So he's going to be that guy you can't really beat. He's like the new Undertaker, right? No matter what you do to him, he keeps getting up. Like, he no-sold. How many stomps? How many kicks? That's all well and good, but eventually that's going to come back and be a problem. And Seth Rollins was the guy that beat everybody. Beat Brock Lesnar, beat whomever, and now he can't beat or hurt Bray Wyatt. Great for now. Going to be a problem down the road. And if anybody turns on Wyatt for that, that's going to be why they turn, is that eventually that gets stale. That gets old. What are you going to do? Who's going to beat him? Nobody can beat him. That's the problem. The character himself, I don't think anybody's going to turn on that because they love the character so much. But how they book him is going to be the real interesting thing. And I don't know how they do it from here because he can't be stopped. All right.
Yeah.
This is a guy, no matter what you do, you can't beat him. Mm-hmm. Where does that go? Right. Like, do eventually bring in a guy who's the only guy who can beat him? And who is that? Like, there's nobody on the roster right now that I look at that is the guy that can beat him. So are you going to create that guy? Are you going to manufacture that guy? Is there a new guy coming up that's going to be that? Like, who is it? And until that happens, he's just going to keep doing what he did at Saudi Arabia. And there's nothing you can do about it. So that could get old. So maybe he doesn't show up as often as not, as most champions would, like Seth Rollins. So does he become the Brock Lesnar of WWE? Yeah, like,
I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Like, so what do you do there? So they've painted themselves into a corner from the very beginning. That's the only thing I don't like about this, is that they should have seen this coming, long-term projections, and they're not really looking at it, and that's an issue. In terms of Brock Lesnar stuff, I think the answer here is they just moved him to Raw, and they just said, well, whatever, he's Brock Lesnar. We'll do what we want. Screw the draft. Screw the rules. That's what they do.
Screw Fox.
Well, I don't think Fox cares because they got Wyatt.
Think if you're going to talk to Fox executives, NBC executives, they would much rather have Brock Lesnar than Bray Wyatt, because sports people news people.
I don't agree. I don't agree at all. I think they realize that he may be a bigger crossover star, but he's not the most popular guy in WWE. That's for sure. The Fiend is the hottest thing in wrestling.
I don't think being the hottest thing in wrestling matters. I think being the hottest thing in general matters. And Brock Lesnar will always be the most famous guy on that roster outside of, bar Ronda Rousey if she ever comes back. Or, even Cain Velasquez doesn't touch Brock Lesnar, I don't think.
No, that's true. But he's definitely not the hottest thing in wrestling.
John Cena may be an exception, right? Like, John Cena could be bigger than Brock Lesnar. Probably
Rock,
is bigger than Brock Lesnar.
Right?
Well, yeah, The Rock is hot. I mean, obviously The Rock would be number one if he was, still relevant in wrestling, I should say. He's definitely relevant. He's the biggest star on the planet.
Well, my point being is you can't bring up Cena in that conversation then.
Cena's of course not. That's why right? I wasn't bringing him up. But I was like, if anything, Cena would be the guy because he shows up more than The Rock ever will ever again.
Oh, I know. Not from what I just read from the Sports Illustrated articles. Did you see that? He just did an interview with Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated. Says he has absolutely no intentions of coming back.
Really?
Yeah. He has he's not writing never in the description, but he has no desire, he's no media plans, he has no future with WWE in terms of any plans that they have going on. And that he said the only reason isn't because I'm too busy in Hollywood, it's because I've watched people get too slow and I don't want to take people's money because I can.
Okay, so he's saying he doesn't want to be
on the draw, show.
And he doesn't want to be like Kurt Angle, where just because you're a nostalgia factor, you don't want to not a shot at anybody. But he's saying,
right.
He's
I
not,
was just going
to
say,
if he's not able to go to the
top. He didn't use the words Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair or Kurt Angle or any of those guys. But that's what he means, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be those guys that are hanging around the business simply because there's money in it to hang around in. He'd rather be The Rock. He'd rather be Stone Cold Steve Austin. He'd rather be those guys that do something outside of wrestling, make their money elsewhere, and then choose to come back when they feel like it. And he has no desire to do that right now. And he
but
even
those
said,
guys also, they left when they were at their hottest, right? Like Stone Cold by injury, unfortunately, and The Rock left in the middle of his prime. Cena can still go for sure, but he's just he's there for the draw at this point, obviously.
Yeah, he could come back and win the most U.S. or the heavyweight championships. He could break that record. He's not gonna though, right? Like if they bring him back, he's got to have a program. And it sure sounds like from his comments, he has no desire to have a program. He's busy. He doesn't care. He forgives The Rock. He says, I shouldn't have said all those things that I said back then. I was ignorant. I didn't know. Right. And that tells me he ain't coming back, and he ain't coming back anytime soon. Even Randy Orton just called him out and said, hey, let's have a match at WrestleMania 6 or 36. He's not going to respond to that. He's not going to have that match. It's not happening.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he's asked now, what was that now? The Rock and Cena? He's asked for a match.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about Orton and The Rock, but I do know that that was just like the other day that he called up John Cena because he was sitting on a plane.
Yeah,
yeah.
Back to the theme though.
But anyway, for sure.
I wanted to just say that we've seen this before: Braun Strowman, Great Khali, Umaga, people who are unbeatable, and eventually they're beaten, The issue is what happens after they get beaten. Braun Strowman doesn't look like he's a pushover now, but like every other guy that's been there has looked like a pushover. And Braun Strowman, I mean, I know it was a count-up, but he just lost to some heavyweight boxer who hasn't really fought in 3 years. You know, I'm not saying, it's not just some guy. It's one of the best boxers of his time in Tyson Fury. But the guy hasn't fought in 3 years, and all of a sudden he comes here, and because he's a big name, he gets the win over Braun Strowman. And I think both of us thought that it should be kind of a no contest with that match, right? Having a winner come out of that match isn't a good thing.
Well, they did. I guess they did as close as they could do to a no contest while having a winner. You know, that knockout punch that was a count out. I know it goes in the record books as a loss for Strowman, but when you view that match, they basically, that was a throwaway. That was just Tyson Fury getting a win, not looking bad. Strowman being able to recover and say, you didn't actually beat me. You just punched me outside the ring and I counted out. Like, that's right. That's what that is. That's a throwaway, even though technically it's a loss for Strowman.
Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. It could have been a worse situation, but it's still just kind of weird to me. But Strowman is an example of a guy who was obviously untouchable, couldn't be beat. The guy never really amounted to anything, so maybe they learned their lesson with that. But they really have to. There is one option for them with Wyatt, where it could be maybe he gets like. And if you're listening, Triple H or Vince McMahon or any writer on the show, this is your out. Maybe he gets afraid of the dark, like the demon, the fiend, right? And he's like, he just becomes regular Bray Wyatt. Because I don't think Bray Wyatt and the fiend are really the same person. I think in character, like in the canon, they're this the same person who can control it, but who also isn't fully aware of what the other person is. I think that could be potentially what it is. Like, we know that the good, you know, the Firefly Funhouse Wyatt is a happy-go-lucky, psychotic guy. But even like when Seth Rollins was at his, was there to burn the place down, he even said, like, why are you doing this, right? So that was kind of an opening for if they eventually need an out. The Fiend is unbeatable, but is Bray Wyatt unbeatable?
Yeah, there's a lot of angles. You're right. There's a lot of angles they can take with this. It's just whether or not we can give WWE enough credit to do that. They tend to go black and white and simple over thought-out complex storylines. And they go, well, he'll just beat that guy. He'll beat that guy. Yeah. That guy will beat him. And then what you'll have is what you mentioned before, the Goldberg situation. Goldberg was unbeatable forever, 100 and however many and oh. Then he lost to a cattle prod in Kevin Nash, and that was pretty much it for him in WCW. You know, so that's probably going to happen with Wyatt. I agree with you there. That's another corner that they've painted themselves into there. That could be an issue. What else can we take out of that Crown Jewel show? I mean, that was the big one, obviously. The women's match. First ever women's match on a international soil like that in a Saudi Arabia show.
Mm-hmm.
I was the one that, I mean, it was great. History was awesome. I feel really good for them, and that was awesome. What I found really interesting about that match was how the match was booked and designed. They were not their characters.
No, not even a little bit.
Lacey Evans was not Lacey Evans in any fashion at all. Was that an issue for you? Or was it one of those things that because this is historic and because it's so different, we can throw characters out the window for the next 20 minutes and just realize this is what we're doing at this moment in time?
I think it's kind of just you let it be and you appreciate the moment thing. I also was like, that's kind of weird that Lacey Evans isn't a character at all. Like, I'm not saying the getup or anything, like her outfit, but she was like, there was no hate between the two. Right? Like, they were just happy and hugging and loving each other because they both realized how big of a moment it is. And in that sense, the same thing kind of happened with Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks. They were kind of in character, but not to the same extent. And Lacey Evans' character may be too abrasive for that crowd. I think at this point, just let it be and let history take its place and enjoy it.
Yeah, no, it was a good moment all around. And you could tell Natalya was, I mean, they were both emotional, but Natalya has really, she deserved it. She's been around forever. She's a veteran in the locker room. She is WWE and promotions for WWE to the core. Sure. So if anybody should have got it, you know, and you could tell the carryover. I mean, she got a big win in a tag match on Raw.
That shocked me.
Asuka tap out, right? I think that's just filter. That's just, you know, what's the word I'm looking for fallout from the pay-per-view. I don't think it'll last, but it's just a feel-good fallout. Loud the show, and next week, the week after, it'll probably go back to normal.
Right.
What was the other one? Oh, the Cain Velasquez match. We should probably talk about that. That is probably not what people thought was going to happen there. Although I'm not really sure what their plan is with him. What did you think about the fact that that match was short enough to be a Twitter post in full, 2 minutes and something seconds, and he tapped out to Lesnar?
I can't believe it. I have no takeaway from that match other than this company has no idea what they're doing with Cain Velasquez, which is amazing because he's one match into his career. That was crazy to me. I have no idea what they're doing.
I think the only thing that I can take from that is that they must have been going for the whole, you know, in MMA and in UFC, there's always that shocking moment where somebody just beats somebody really quickly and you don't expect it. Like it happened with Brock Lesnar. Yeah, and what was his name? Frank Mir.
Frank Mir.
Yeah, the guy that, yeah, he leg tapped bar. Him with an ankle bar, right? And Lesnar had just turned around to walk away, and he caught him. You know, it was over before you knew it. And yeah, you Lesnar knew Lesnar was going to go
in the match, and then he just got beat. And then, like, the next time they faced off, that almost happened again, but then Lesnar just beat him down because he realized he learned from his mistake. But, I mean, you're right. It can happen, like, just out of nowhere. I think that's probably what they were going for, right? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they'll explain it when they get back to television and say, hey, Cain was overconfident. He went in there. He was trying to do this and that. Got caught. And that was the deal. And so they can explain that away. And maybe that's what they were looking for. How do we have this match? How do we make it a draw? How do we explain away the fact that he's going to lose his first match here? And can we write that in there? That's probably what they're doing. I don't think I love the way that they did it. But it makes sense. Like, again, we talked about it before the pay-per-view. Here's a corner they've painted themselves into. What are they going to do to get out of it? That was their solution.
I guess so.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably talk about what happened after that pay-per-view. You know, the whole travel issue, the plane being stuck in Saudi Arabia.
What perfect timing for them.
Oh, my gosh. And it turned into one of the best SmackDowns all year.
Like, we already knew that NXT was going to be part of Survivor Series, right? Like, we already knew this was going to happen.
Well, I didn't actually know that until I watched Crown Jewel. And then I saw the promotions for it, and they talked about it, and then they said NXT, and I thought, did they just say NXT? And it makes sense, but I didn't know that. I had no idea that that was the plan.
Well, either way, you knew during Crown Jewel, right?
Right. We learned that right away.
The next day, so for those that don't know, there were, like, plane and travel issues for a large, large portion of the roster that were over there in Saudi Arabia, and they couldn't get back to the States. So with SmackDown happening the next day, which, by the way, is kind of a really big logistical issue that I don't know how they didn't consider that beforehand. But anyway, realistically you'd think this is horrible. What's WWE going to do without most of their roster for a show? Obviously, you have guys like Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman who are there because they had taken their own flight out earlier. But what are you going to do in this situation? Well, fortunately, you already had plans for NXT to be on your Survivor Series show, which is, you know, brand supremacy. So having NXT come out and just various points of the night and having very different super shows come out and talk and attack and whatever it was to different people, it couldn't have been better timed because they definitely needed it to be this exact moment for this invasion angle to start, because that roster would have been thin otherwise. And they got to show off some of the best talent they have in NXT. I mean, I'd say all the best talent they have in NXT, who minus like Finn Balor, who came to the SmackDown and really just made their mark, including an NXT Championship match, a dream match. Yeah, I'd say.
I mean, it was an awesome show, and I get the sense that this was all going to happen, but maybe like a week or two later, like the way that they were building up Survivor Series and Crown Jewel, that they probably had a plan for NXT to be part of the Survivor Series build. I mean, we've seen it the past couple of years where Raw guys go to SmackDown and SmackDowns go to Raw, and they all fight each other with their blue and red t-shirts on and all that kind of stuff.
So
you knew it was coming, but I got the sense that it wasn't coming right away, and this whole travel thing threw that into it. And you know that that has to be the case because so many guys have talked about Adam Cole, Matt Riddle, getting the call very last minute. I mean, Matt Riddle was on his way to another NXT show when Matt Bloom called him and said, no, you got to turn around and go to the airport because we got people going on a plane to SmackDown. He's like, okay, you know, okay, bro. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't know. So these guys did not know they were going to be on that show, and they found out that day, and everybody made it to the point where Michaels and Triple H walked onto the set as Lesnar was finishing his promo.
Yeah.
Like, that's how close they cut all this. So clearly they were going to be part of the build, but it wasn't going to happen this weekend. And I think what probably happened was they were on the show. The feedback was so, the ratings bumped up and everybody's like, holy crap, let's go with this. Let's run with this. And because of that, they were then booked on Raw. And now they're booked on Friday Night SmackDown tonight. And AJ Styles and the OC showed up on NXT on Wednesday. So they're just milking it. They're just going, okay, well, that worked. Let's just do more of that. So they're going to do this all the way to Survivor Series, probably to the point where maybe it's too much. But, you know, that whole travel thing, you're right, 100%. Terrible that it happened. Felt really bad for the stars, and there was some concern over why they were there. But now that everybody's safe, this is the best possible thing ever.
Yeah, for sure. I think you also undersell. Yeah. You understood just there when you said, well, AJ Styles and the club showed up on NXT. Finn Balor was a part of that whole like showing up on NXT thing, the little face off there. So that's a cool moment for anyone that really wants to see that again.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. I mean, what are they doing there? Are they teasing something? Like, is he going to be a part of some faction? Like, from what I've heard, AJ Styles wants to have a match at Survivor Series where the OC takes on the Undisputed Era in some way, but it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Because some of the members of those factions already booked for other matches.
And Bobby Fish like also injured. He lost a tooth.
Yeah, did you see that?
Yeah.
That video was crazy. When Gallows threw him into the trailer, and his face literally exploded all over the thing. I thought maybe he hit his nose and broke his nose or something. But yeah, that was legit. Like that.
Bobby Fish can't probably catch a break.
I'm sure he'll be able to wrestle. Like, that's one of those injuries that really suck, and it probably hurts like crazy. But it is one of those things that keeps those guys out long term. So I'm sure he's probably going to get patched up like Cesaro did when he rammed his teeth up his gums through the post. Oh, he was back like the next night. You know what I mean?
Just awful. Yeah.
Like those guys are tough. And that's not a permanent ligament injury. It's not like a pulled ACL or he'll be back. He'll be part of Survivor Series. I can't imagine what he wouldn't think he could do to make it there because that is a big opportunity for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge opportunity. And in the grand scheme of things, the injuries he's had, this is... I mean, facial injuries are no joke, especially with, like, dental stuff. Like, people take it for granted. But they're no joke. But like you said, you can get around it. And considering the injuries he's had to deal with, this is best-case scenario if you're going to get injured, I guess.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But you're right. The whole tease of Finn Balor and AJ Styles, and that's a whole different story that is very intriguing because we don't really know what Balor is. Like, is he a heel? Is he not a heel? What's he doing in NXT? He's been trash-talking WWE storylines. He's been talking about being back in NXT. Like, we don't know what he is. Yeah. So it's really interesting to see that they might be teasing. And this is the first reference ever in WWE, and it's a subtle one, to the Bullet Club, right? Like, that he's pointed the fingers like he did. And even AJ Styles didn't do it. He just put up the two sweet, right? So it'll be very interesting to see where they go with this. But Survivor Series... the one thing that worries me a little bit, and I'm old school. I love the old Survivor Series traditional matches. There isn't one yet. Will there be any? That's a big thing for me. I love those traditional Survivor Series matches, and so far, of all the matches booked, there aren't any. So I hope that they do that. These triple threat matches are great, but I hope that's not all we see.
There's going to be a traditional match. I think there has to be. Is it going to be like a three-way match, though? Is it going to be like Raw and SmackDown versus NXT? Is it going to be Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT? Is it going to be Raw versus SmackDown, Raw versus NXT, SmackDown versus Raw, SmackDown versus NXT? Like, I have no idea what they're going to do with this kind of stuff.
My guess is it'll be a four corners. It'll be NXT in one corner, NXT or SmackDown corner. And you're going to have a four-way elimination team match. That's got to have 20 people in it. Whoever survives will claim brand supremacy. Like, that's my guess, right? I don't think, even though NXT UK and NXT have sort of worked together, I think they might try to split them up. Like, especially tonight with SmackDown taking place in Manchester. If Walter and those guys show up, that's a whole different deal, right? They're there, the Emporium and Undisputed Era, different factions, easily writable that they don't get along. Even though they're both NXT, one thinks the other faction is better than another. You know what I mean? Like, they could do that easily, and it would make sense for me to see that in a Survivor Series matchup.
I think what's actually going to happen, it's going to be Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT versus AEW. Okay, I'm going to stop. we should probably get into the full gear pay-per-view, though, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, nice transition. That's a good segue.
I'll do what I can.
Before we get into full gear, though, I got to ask you, did you watch Dynamite on Wednesday, and did you see that Cody Rhodes promo?
Oh my god, that Cody Rhodes promo. That I've watched it like five times. I don't think you can get any more perfect of a promo, right? Cody Rhodes, it was the perfect emotion, the perfect inflection on his words, the perfect the words he used, the phrasing, the pause for effect, just everything he said. It was so. If you haven't seen it, you really have to see it. Talking about, you know, Jericho having this, like, living and you know, growing up with the same silver spoon in his mouth, because for those that don't know, Chris Jericho or Chris Irvin, his dad is Ted Irvin, former New York Ranger and Winnipeg Jet, one of the original tough guys in hockey, power forwards, one would say. So Chris Jericho is not, you know, a stranger to being the son of a rich and famous person, like, you know, you say, or even then, I would say that neither Dusty Rhodes or Ted Irvin were rich, I should clarify. But they were athletes. They were famous athletes, slash wrestlers and performers. So same kind of storyline is just there. The right amount of, you know, TV-14 language as opposed to just keeping it perfectly clean. Everything about it, yeah, the emotions.
No, it was good.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, I'm with you. The idea, the background, the storyline on the promo, introducing it, why they did what they're doing with Cody Rhodes being an exec and there being some controversy there. It makes total sense to me storyline-wise. I thought it was a bit of a reach to say Silver Spoon because, I mean, Jericho's dad was a hockey player, not the best one, and Dusty Rhodes is a professional wrestler, so those two things are kind of not really the same. It's like apples and oranges, but I get it. Like, it makes sense that you would say, oh, hey, whatever. But the promo was awesome. Like, the delivery was so good. It built up the match. Makes you want to watch it. Even though you think now Cody Rhodes seems to be the shoe-in to win based on the stipulation, I don't know. Like, something tells me MJF is going to turn on this guy. That's my prediction. But I just don't. I don't know. And the promo was delivered in such a way that it's really hard to know. And that's what makes it so good, is that the build-up's really strong. You want to see this match. And you're not really sure which way it's going to go. Which is awesome. And I know this is going to seem like a shot from some people who are big AEW fans, but considering AEW seems to be having some attendance issues of late, if you saw those pictures in the arena for their last show, building towards a show people want to see is important for them. You know, especially if you're talking about your competition and you're talking about ratings and you're talking about this or that, you can't have, you know, 2,000, 3,000 empty seats in your arena when you're a company that's less than 2 months old.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to build this stuff. You got to build it properly. And I thought that was really good. What made it even better was the response video from Jericho later in the show. I had to watch that thing two or three times. I don't think a lot of fans caught what was going on until about three quarters of the way through the video, but it was so good, especially his aunt church friend lady. Oh my gosh, that was awesome.
Yeah. Jericho is, he's the perfect pro wrestler. I've said it time and time again, and I'll say it a million times more. He just gets it. Everything he does is gold. I also, before we continue with the promo, I did want to say that his dad actually played for the Rangers, Blues, Kings, and one game for the Bruins, never the Jets. But anyway, wrestling fans don't care about that. That's just for my own sake.
No, it's all good. People who listen to us probably know that we're hockey fans at this point, so it's all good.
What's hockey?
Yeah. Well, what about the match predictions for the show? I mean, we know Jericho is going to be taking on Cody Rhodes, so who do you think walks away with it?
Oh, that's a tough one, just because, man, if Cody loses, he doesn't get the challenge to the title again. But do we really want Cody to win the match? I wouldn't mind Cody winning it, let me be clear. But is that the right decision for the company? I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to write this all through with that the implication of never challenging. Because it wasn't just a challenging Jericho. It was never challenging ever for the title. So I would say it has to be Cody in that sense, right?
It's easy. I shouldn't say easy, but we've seen in professional wrestling in this industry, nothing's ever forever. You know what I mean?
Oh, wait, what if he wins by disqualification?
I suppose.
Sure.
But I said it earlier and alluded to it, and I think this is what will happen. MJF versus Cody Rhodes is a built-in rivalry just waiting to happen. I don't know why MJF is sort of a babyface and has been in AEW since they debuted on TNT. He's the perfect heel. He may be better than Jericho. You know, like, he's absolutely an ideal guy that you want to build into a huge star as a heel. Yeah. So for him to turn on Cody Rhodes and build that up, that's where I think they should be going, and they probably will be going. eventually down the road, somebody can hold the title and a clause out of Cody Rhodes and say, nope, I want you that bad. I'll let you break the rule. You can challenge me for the title. They can do that. And the way that I've watched AEW so far, they don't always stick to their rules, even though they talk about how much they want to do it. They bend a lot of stuff. There's always a bend point with them. So right. I could see down the road, you know, in a year or whatever, that they do that. So for me, Jericho hangs on to it. MJF screws Cody. That's where this goes.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Like you said, nothing's forever, and that's kind of what I was thinking as well, where even if they say this now in, like, a year, 2 years, 6 months, whatever it is, if they decide, hey, by the way, I'm going to, like, fight a match to try and get back into this, whatever it could be, I don't know, maybe turns heel and says, hey, I own the place, you know, right? Like, they can really do whatever they want there.
I suppose that's true.
I don't know what's going to happen with that match, but I'm really excited for it.
What else you got? We got Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley.
Another non-sanctioned match.
Yeah, that's twice already now.
Yeah, but Moxley complained about it. Like, yeah. In character, in wrestling, he went to see Tony Khan, he complained about it, right? Like, that's, I like that they're at least addressing it. I don't know why it's non-sanctioned or lights-out match, but here we are.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in AEW. I don't want to come off as a hater because I absolutely love the product, but there's a lot of things that I watch and I'm like, huh? Like this whole win-loss record thing, I think in theory it's a great idea, but the way it's being implemented I think is terrible. I don't think it makes any sense. And to get around it, all you got to do is pull the match from the card officially and say, oh, hey, by the way, you're going to have this match now. But it won't count towards your win-loss record. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense. So that sort of thing. I think AEW is taking advantage of, you know, the referees looking the other way when they shouldn't be, stuff like that. It just drives me a little nutty, but at sure. The same time, you know, this is going to be a good match. It's going to be crazy. Like, I don't know who's going to win it. I think, I don't know, man. I'm going to go with Omega, but it's a toss-up for me.
Yeah, I'm also going to go Omega, but I don't know. Like, because it's unsanctioned, it really doesn't matter as far as win-loss goes, like you said, so... Even if Omega loses, it doesn't matter. Both guys could do well in a win and a loss. So I don't know that it really matters who wins. I think this is one of those matches you got to just appreciate and cheer for your favorite, right? I'm going to say Omega.
Yep. What else we got on this card?
Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz.
Right.
Good match. Like a dream match.
I think Santana and Ortiz probably take it just because they're so fresh and so new. And you maybe don't want to have them come right out of the gates in their first real major match on a pay-per-view and lose.
Sure.
And Young Bucks have a pretty good record. They lost recently to Private Party, which was a surprise. But
very big surprise,
they can take another loss and it not really hurt them. They're in a way, they're sort of like Daniel Bryan in that win or lose. They're kind of untouchable in that division and on that show. So it doesn't really matter what they do. But I think you want to give Santana Ortiz a big win here to legitimize them as a top tag team in that division. So that's my pick.
I would agree with that. I think the Young Bucks and Omega have also both been very, like all three of them have been very willing to lose and put someone over for the benefit of the show. Because if anything, they understand how wrestling works and wins and losses don't really matter. They matter for storyline purposes, but winning and losing only matters when you're trying to get someone over, and getting people over is all you could ever want to do. Ideally, you want every single person in your company to be over, right? And if you're an executive vice president of that company, then I want everybody to be over. And we know that we're stars, so what difference does it make? I agree. Plus, you also have the built-in Jake Hager and Sammy Guevara, who would also come in for both the Jericho-Cody match and the Young Bucks versus Santana Ortiz match. So you and also the Omega-Moxley match, right? Like, Omega's still part of the Elite. You definitely have the openings for that full inner circle to interfere and do what they need to do.
Yeah, and they haven't been shy about crossing matches over and guys showing up in other people's matches despite their placement on the card. So who knows? That could turn into a total chaotic situation. Women's matches. What have they got on the card for that one?
Bea Priestley versus Britt Baker. I'm really excited for that one. I'm going to say Britt Baker. That's a pre-show match.
Yeah. For me, that's an easy pick. It's got to be Britt Baker. If you watch that promo, the way she delivered it, talking about Priestley, you know, not being a cautious worker, hurting her, not being safe, you know, they're building her up to be a major player. And their women's division is so weak that they need a legitimate star, and Baker to me is about the closest thing they have. So yeah, you got to give her some consecutive wins here and build her up. And this is a shoe-in pick for me. I think Britt Baker all the way.
You have Rio versus Sakura for the AEW Women's Championship match. I can't see Rio losing here. I think Rio me just either. Retains it and kind of builds up until you get that potential Rio versus Britt Baker match.
Yeah, I can see that too. I don't know what else to say about this match other than she's a pretty good wrestler. She's pretty tiny. To have her win, keep the title for a while, and not have too many changes too quickly is probably a good idea on their part.
Yeah. Potentially the match of the night, SoCal Uncensored versus Lucha Brothers versus Private Party. I talked about it briefly when Private Party first had their match at was a Double or Nothing, and I said, wow, this Mark Quinn guy looked incredible. And every time I ever see him, he looks incredible. I've got Mark Quinn, I've got Darby Allin as like my two like sleeper picks in AEW for like super sharp potential. Whether or not they actually win like world championships, I don't care. But like these guys are so good and they need to be acknowledged. And I think that they've done enough. I don't have to even talk about them. They've shown what they can do. We know what the Lucha Brothers can do, and we know that SoCal Uncensored is that perfect anchor of veterans. So that matches a lot of potential.
I'm kind of glad SoCal. I mean, obviously they're the team title holders, so they're included in this match. But to me, they're going to be the anchor of that match, and I don't mean anchor in a bad way, as in dragging it down. I mean anchor as in keeping it down, where it doesn't become just a high spot fest. That has been one of my critiques of the show so far, is that some of these matches, especially the tag matches, don't logically make sense. They're just simply built so these high spots can be put in, and you sort of forget logic, and you go, oh, hey, that guy's been outside the ring for about 28 seconds. Where's the count out? Oh, hey, they're double teaming the guy for like 9 seconds in the ring. Where's the five count? Like, guys are pinning guys they shouldn't be pinning. Like, that's an issue I don't love. And when you get Private Party or Lucha Bros just on their own, you're probably going to see that happen. SoCal is going to keep that sort of within, you know, an acceptable level, and it should be a very good match because of it. So it's going to have that mix of high spots, but also believable spots where, you know, I think SoCal retains, but I think Lucha Bros and Private Party, like you said, they're going to be some stars to watch in the future. I just don't quite think their time is yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this match. I don't know who's going to win, but I'm excited for it. All three are legitimate contenders. It would make sense for SoCal and Censor to retain for now, and just like you said, build things up a little bit and give everyone their time to really, this goes for everyone on the roster, give people time to build. Like Britt Baker right now isn't a main event player as far as the title goes, but we know what they're building towards with her, and we know that they're slowly doing it the right way. So if they can do that properly, then awesome. Joey Janela versus Sean Spears. That's an interesting match. That's probably the perfect mid-card match, right?
Spears do here. Like, this is a guy who came over to AEW for, you know, grass is greener. What's going on over here? He was given Tully Blanchard, and out of the gate, he lost to Cody Rhodes and then was barely ever seen again, right? So he is due for somebody to give him a win, to make him look like the guy they thought they were signing. Joey Janela, he's a cat war here. He's expendable in terms of he can take a loss and it doesn't really matter. Sean Spears needs this more, and that's why I think he's going to get the win here.
I agree with you. Sean Spears has to win this, and if not, then what's the point? Why did he ever even leave WWE to go here? But I guess we'll see. I do think they're high on Sean Spears, at least backstage. So we'll see what happens with that. And there is one more match, and this is a rematch. It's Adam Page versus Pac, but technically the first time under the AEW banner, even though it's the second time, because they kind of used the match from another promotion, right, to try and rectify things that for that what was supposed to be the Double or Nothing world title match. Adam Page versus Pac is a really good match. I think Adam Page is they're building him perfectly, and he's the guy who they. You said MJF versus Cody is the perfect, like they're building towards it, right? Adam Page is being built up to be the perfect face star of that company, and I think that he's he has to do well in this match in a win or a loss. Pac, we know, is also a really good heel. I just don't know that they have plans for him as a world champion long term right now anyway, and I think Adam Page is their guy for that, so I can see him winning this match.
Yeah, I'm with
he's also their buddy.
Well, yeah, you know what though? I used to think that buddy-buddy thing mattered in AEW. I'm not sure that it does anymore. I mean, always there's something to it, right? Like, you hire these guys because they're your friends, and you give them spots on the show because they're your friends. But they're all buddy-buddy. I mean, clearly they're doing what they think is right for the product. But I'm with you that Adam Page is the guy here. Pac has won some unexpected matches. He's beaten Kenny Omega, and he's beaten other guys that you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. And Adam Page needs the win here. Pac can afford the loss, and he can write it off as, you know, being bitter and mad and he lost the match. So logistically, it just makes sense to have Adam Page be the guy that goes over here, because Pac has been going over lately, and he can afford to take a loss here. And Adam Page, like you said, being the future, or at least one of the future stars of the company, you got to start doing something with this guy, because right now he's the guy that you want to be your face, but he's sort of stuck in the mid card and hasn't really been on TV all that much. I mean, he's been in some matches, but he hasn't really been given the prominent role, and they need to start doing that for him. So I see this as an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I think the prominent role will come with time, and I think they're doing a good job with pacing things and making sure that you don't get too burnt out on anyone too fast.
Yep. All right. Well, I mean, from the sounds of it, the way the card's being built and the matches, it should be interesting. I think there's going to be some really good matches. I think there'll be some interesting turns and twists that, you know, maybe we're calling and expecting, but at the same time, when you see them, will be fun to watch. So I have a feeling it's going to be a good show all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give it like a pre-star prediction of at least a 4 to 5 star pay-per-view. It looks really good. Like, it looks really good, honestly, on paper. Moxley versus Omega, I'm excited for. Jericho versus Cody, I'm excited for. Young Bucks versus Santana Ortiz, I'm very excited for. Paige versus Pac, excited for. Even like Britt Baker getting her push, I like Rhea Priestley as well. Like I said, the tag team match, it's really just a good card all the way through. From top to bottom, it doesn't get much better than this, so we'll see.
Place to leave it. We've talked WWE, we've talked Saudi Arabia, we've talked Crown Jewel, we've talked AEW the full year and the show and the promos and what have you. I suppose as we, you know, air this, we'll be headed into SmackDown tonight. Hopefully that show is good and there's some NXT presence on there and they build towards Survivor Series, and that pay-per-view will be good too. Any notes, anything you want to say before we leave people for this week?
I guess we can just say that Randy Orton apparently signed for at least 5 more years with his contract, so that's important.
Yep, that's a big and good timing, you know what I mean, in the face of everything that's happening with Saudi Arabia and the rumors around Crown Jewel and people being unhappy and what have you. One of the guys who was teasing potentially jumping to AEW is not jumping to AEW. He's going to stay with WWE for 5 years, and it's good timing for WWE because they're going to keep one of their bigger stars, and he's not jumping, and so now maybe guys like The Revival will follow suit. So we'll see if that leads to any more people sticking put and what's going on, but it's a good keep for them, even though he may not be the guy he used to be. He's still extremely popular, and losing him to AEW probably would have hurt more than keeping him in WWE, if you know what I mean. You know, like, when you lose a name like that to your rival, even if you weren't going to do anything with him, you can't afford to lose him, and that they're avoiding. So that's a good keep for them.
Yeah, I agree, especially considering he's kind of hinted and he's talked, he's actually mentioned AEW in the past, which is funny because he had that whole, like, you know, hating that flipping and stuff. And then he kind of goes back and forth. I think he's just the ultimate troll on Twitter and in interviews and stuff. Randy Orton is Randy Orton. He's a WWE guy till the day he dies. And if he ever goes elsewhere, it's because they offered him a boatload of money and he just doesn't care anymore. But for now, yeah, I think that in this case, he's like, what, 44 years old at least or something like that. So he looks like a lifer.
Well, and he's not stupid. All you got to do is mention the words AEW and the leverage is immediately on your side. So if WWE had any thoughts at all that he was going to take off, by just even teasing that he might, they're going to be like, okay, here you go. And here's all your money. And that could be what he was doing, right? So he's not stupid. And these guys understand it. And they know if they use social media and they say so. I mean, we've seen it. Maria and Mike Kanellis and these other people who mention it. And then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, here's some money. Stop talking about it.
Right? Yeah.
That's all they had to do, and Randy Orton's not dumb. So, but it's still good. I think at some point he's probably going to get another title run. I don't know where and who he'll be facing and if he'll be a heel or a babyface, but that guy's just too popular. That RKO is just too huge a move. at some point he gets another run before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you you coming on this week. I'm excited about full game. I haven't been excited about Raw and SmackDown in a while, but this NXT stuff makes you, you know, makes you realize why you're a wrestling fan again. So
we'll talk next week.
Yeah, it's always a good pay-per-view. It's amazing how popular it's becoming with this NXT stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, let's remind everybody where they can hear us. Anchor.fm, thesportster.com, wrestlingwriteups.com, a bunch of other podcast platforms. And I've been neglecting YouTube, but YouTube. So we hope people tune in, share it, rate it, download it, subscribe to it, and listen in for next week. Buddy, until then, I'll talk to you soon.